come home in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How you doing? Did you go to a farmer's market this weekend? Did you have a good weekend? I hope so. Maybe some of you even stopped by Dry Creek Peach and Produce. They are right in the midst of the harvest of the Arctic Gem White Peach. I was up there on Friday. Oh, they're so good. I have a flat at home. I'm eating them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's just no peach like the Arctic Gem White Peach. Not everyone agrees with me. I was talking to Gail up there. It's Gail and Brian's place. And she's talking about how a lot of the bakeries won't take anything except the orange peaches. So, you know, not everyone appreciates the delicate subtlety. The white peach is very subtle. I think the Arctic Gem is the most subtle of them all. And it has this very velvety texture. And part of the reason I'm thinking about it right now is we're going to be talking about Pinot Noir tonight. And to me, Pinot Noir is all about that silky velvet on satin texture as well. So that's an introduction to my guest. I also want to start suggesting something that I don't always suggest here on Mouthful. If you're listening either on your computer or if you're hanging out near your computer while you listen, I'm going to start giving the websites of my guests so that you can take a look while we're talking. So we have Dan Goldfield from Dutton Goldfield. Thanks very much for being here, Dan.
I love it. Thanks so much for having
me. Seen you forever at various places. I've always wanted to get you in the studio, and it took Marin County to get you here. And from Marin County, we have Mark Pasternak of Devil's Gulch Ranch, someone else I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. Very diverse in the farm there, including with grapes.
Thank you very much for having me.
So websites are easy: devilsgulchranch.com and duttongoldfield.com. Don't need to say all those W's and things anymore. In fact, if you're working on the new upgraded Safari from Apple, you shouldn't even type in anything except the name plus .com or .net. It's just so smooth. It's like driving a great sports car. So, grapes in Marin.
Why not? Fantastic place for growing Pinot Noir particularly.
And it has a history. It's not brand new. There were, seven or eight wineries in Marin about 100 years ago or something like that.
I'm not sure 100 years ago how many there were, but certainly within the last, 5 or 6 years, it was not long ago that we had more wineries than Lake County. That has changed in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. There's a long grape growing history in Marin, both at Escal Winery, and which was a winery, and at in Novato, which had 200 acres of vines. And there was also a 20-some-odd acre vineyard in Santa Rafael, And Fairfax, I think, had about a 20-acre vineyard. So,
and some out near the coast as well.
Out near the coast, not.
No? So that's,
not
that's
pre-prohibition.
Completely new?
Yes.
Oh, I see. So pre-prohibition.
The history.
Okay. Okay.
I was talking about. And actually, Escal predates the winery, Escal, predates most of Napa's and Sonoma's wineries. So the history there is, it goes back a long way. In terms of modern grape growing, the earliest vineyards in Marin that are currently producing are the two that are in East Marin, along Highway 101, that both have Cabernet. That would be the Pacheco Ranch Winery, which you can see as you're driving by, across from Hamilton Air Force Base. And there's one that's near in Terra Linda that's near the Kaiser facility. And that also, that's Quail Hill, and that also is Cabernet. They were planted in the early 70s when there was a big influx of and appreciation for Cabernet and stuff. My vineyard would be the first one in West Marin. It was planted in 1980, first planted in 1980 with Pinot and Chardonnay. Originally destined to be for sparkling, which it did produce fruit for sparkling up until about 1990 when I hooked up with Dan, and he basically told me if I kept selling it for sparkling, he was going to kill me.
So who was buying it for sparkling?
Kalen Cellars, which is, in fact, a Marin County winery, a small one. They have almost a cultish following, and Terry and Francis Layton are both microbiologists. They were, I think Terry was the head of the microbiology department at UC Berkeley. They are single-handedly responsible for a lot of the really special yeast, Burgundy yeast and Champagne yeast that came over through the last 20 years. But
you mentioned the word cultish. To give you an idea of Marin County viticulture as completely tied to it as we are, there's just about 47,000 acres, I believe, of planted grapes in Napa County, over 50,000 planted acres in Sonoma County, and about 200 planted acres in Marin County.
171.
And
is
it divided among many varietals?
The most up-and-coming, without a doubt, is Pinot Noir. If you think of the great Pinot, of course, I'm biased, being a Russian River and Sonoma Coast Pinot producer myself. But if you consider the coastal areas of Sonoma County where such fabulous Pinot Noir grows, Marin County on the coast is essentially a continuation of that. And if, as a winemaker, what I truly love are the cold, foggy places, it really doesn't get any colder and foggier and crazier for growing grapes than Devil's Gulch Ranch. Mark doesn't like to talk about it, but it takes a bit of a nut to farm in the places that Pinot Noir winemakers most love, I think.
Well, cold and foggy suits me just fine. I love it. That's why I'm in Sebastopol, and I could be further west if I had a place. So you're in Nicasio, right?
Yeah. Nicasio, by Marin standards, is not the coldest and foggiest. I mean, there is Point Reyes, but I think you'd be a little over the edge in terms of ripening fruit. When we first planted back in 1980, I was a student of Rich Thomas's at Santa Rosa JC. And Rich is wonderful. Basically, his philosophy was you could grow wine grapes anywhere, including the freeway, if people just wouldn't run into them. And so when I came
to... Anybody ever see the movie Other People's Money?
Yeah, right. But Rich is a wonderful advocate of grape growing. And so when I started taking his classes, I had a girlfriend at the time who was a wine person at a restaurant, and I got intrigued with the idea of growing grapes out there, and everybody said, no, you couldn't do it. And so I took some of Rich's classes and night classes, and then I approached Rich with the idea. And again, as I said, his thing was absolutely, you can grow grapes out here. And we planted them for sparkling because we didn't think we'd get them ripe, which turned out to not be the case at all, as we found out. But we planted them initially. I planted 7 acres, and we are, quite a bit warmer than Point Reyes and the Fog Belt, but somewhat cooler than Novato or Caneros kind of climate. And so as the grapes started coming into production, they went to, as I said, Kalen, who made sparkling. He made a Tête de Cuvée. Terry wanted to make a late disgorged, and I think he achieved that, since I think some of his 1988 is still on the Lees.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, but
that's
about 19.
Scary.
Yeah, it is. But it's wonderful stuff. 1990, I had a very, for me at the time, big harvest, and Terry did not have enough room, and I went around begging and asking various people if they could make, if they were interested in Marin County Pinot Noir, and I asked all of the classic usual suspects at the time, the Tony Soders, the Rocciolis, the William Selyum, all of the people.
When was this, what year?
That would have been 1990.
1991, actually.
Okay, 91 is when I hooked up with you, yeah.
Because he needed to scrape the bottom of the barrel, as I was a La Crema at the time.
Yeah, right.
And we were in bankruptcy, but he called me anyway. So that was the nature of the time.
I was desperate. But I think in 1990, that's right. You didn't get any 90 fruit. Because my friend, a very dear friend of mine, Michael Michaud, was the winemaker at Chalon. And he had been his... first girlfriend, or a girlfriend of his, had been a roommate of my wife's at UC Davis. And we used to go down to the Chalon area where Michael was and help with the harvest and do a bunch of really neat stuff. And he was one of the people that encouraged the idea in me to plant grapes up there. So in 1990, when I had all this extra fruit, I called Michael up and said, Michael, what do I do? And he says, well, if you can't sell it, let me know and we'll figure something out. And ultimately, I did take, I don't know, a ton or two, I don't remember, down there, and we made it, you know, basically in his garage kind of thing. You know, it got dissipated to friends and family sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But it clearly proved that vineyard would, in fact, produce still wine grapes. Notwithstanding that we didn't give it the greatest treatment in the world. So in 91, I hooked up with Dan and we started really focusing on that my vineyard, as which was the only one producing Pinot Noir grapes at that point in West Marin for still wine. And subsequently, as La Crema went into the KJ whole business model and stuff, I stayed with them and they bought my fruit for many years, and it ended up being the first Marin County labeled Pinot Noir, certainly in 97 by Hartford.
96 and 97 actually.
Now,
and what was interesting about it was when you think labeled. Of, you know, we talked about fog and sun, you still need that sunshine. We love to talk about cold, obviously, but in reality, it's the coolest place that will truly ripen the grapes that often is the best place for that particular varietal. And the beauty of Devil's Gulch is because the yields tend to be so low, and that comes from the fact that the springtime is very blustery. It's windy and wet there in the spring, so the flowering is poor, or the set from the flowering is poor. So even though it is so cool, it really does always get ripe, especially in the years when it's very well tended, which is almost everyone. But there's a beauty of the concentration that comes from these really special, almost marginal places. And if you've been to Devil's Gulch, if you haven't, you need to go. Mark loves to show people around because it's kind of lonely out there. But it's extremely steep, extremely thin soil, pretty difficult place to grow grapes. But I think because of it, you get these tiny little berries and just lots of focus, lots of character in the fruit. Because for me, great wine isn't about, you know, which is better, because there's lots of great wines, just like you were talking about peaches. It's about personality. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is a place with true personality. And
now, just before we went on the air, you poured some wine. So would you talk about what you poured and talk about the personality?
The grower or the wine?
What's in the glass?
What's in the glass? The grower's in the glass. This is the first wine we poured. We brought two wines this evening. One is the current release, actually not yet released, Devil's Gulch Pinot from 2007. But just for my own edification and us in the we in the studio, I brought a 2002 Devil's Gulch Pinot Noir. We've been making it for Dutton Goldfield since the year 2000. Before that, as I said, I made it for La Crema and Hartford Court. But the 2002 is a real particular favorite of mine. It was a moderate crop by Devil's Gulch standards, which means about a ton and a half an acre. You always get this blackberry and leather character to me from Devil's Gulch. There's always a little bit of wildness to it. And I think it's just the nature of the coastal areas. For me, the 2002, which obviously is now 7 years old, or approaching 7 years old, is just coming around. It goes from this really focused, chunky blackberry to a broader, silkier wine that I think Pinot Noir is all about.
It's very silky right now.
What I love about Devil's Gulch in particular, and really all of my favorite Pinot Noir vineyards, is that you can get the concentration, but it's still silky and it's still moderate alcohol and the acidity is still there. I love truly ripe California fruit, but I don't like overly ripe California alcohol. So Devil's Gulch.
I don't like that. Really, I don't like that either. And I don't like it when you can't tell it's a Pinot. You know, these Pinots that are trying to capture the Syrah market or something. I don't know. But this has that real pretty. It always makes me think of black taffeta. And this one is a little racy. So it's like Scarlett O'Hara in that black taffeta when she goes to the ball and she's not supposed to dance because she's newly widowed, but she dances anyway. That's what this right. That's what the wine reminds me of.
What's amazing is Mark has...
You're listening to Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. We are talking about primarily Pinot Noir from Marin County. But before I do that, I want to talk about music for just a second. That was Tina Ka'apana singing Punalu'u. And that particular song is about Punalu'u on Big Island, Punalu'u Black Sand Beach. It's a gorgeous place. Her son led Ka'apana, and he was raised at nearby Kala or Kalapana, which is not all that far, certainly as the crow flies. From Punalu'u. Led is going to be here on Friday night. He'll be in Sebastopol at the Blue Sky Center. It's at 6791 Sebastopol Avenue. That is the former Ford dealership, and it's now all these cool electric cars and things that look just a little space age and really spiffy. Anyway, he's going to be there. The doors open Friday at 7:30. The show starts at 8 o'clock. If you get tickets before Friday, they are $18. If you wait until you get tickets at the door, it's $20. But, you know, Led has a really big following, and space is pretty limited. So if you want to go, you might want to go ahead and get tickets. The number to call for tickets is 823-3227. That's 823-3227. And that is Led Ka'apana coming up on Friday. This Friday, July 31st, at the Blue Sky Center in downtown Sebastopol. And we're featuring his music and that wonderful song by his departed mama. So we're talking about Marin County. And I was just comparing the 2002 vintage to Scarlett O'Hara in the dance scene when she has on that racy taffeta morning dress. MOURNING morning dress. I don't know what y'all think. I mean, I just talk about wine in those kind of terms. And it's
free association.
It's how I relate to wine.
For myself, I don't.
Okay. It's okay.
I relate from a much more agricultural sense, from a grower's sense. I'm much more of a gourmand. I don't have all those idiosyncrasies, you know, or the details.
The traditional terms.
Well, in terms of my palate, I just don't have it. I mean, that's why I leave winemaking.
Though he does have the wardrobe that you were describing.
Yeah, right.
I bet you look really good in black taffeta.
Yeah, thank you. But I don't have the palate, you know, somebody like Dan, and so I leave it to that. And what I do appreciate is, you know, growing the grapes and seeing where they end up and how they end up. And so, you know, this is... it's big, you know. It's got a lot of flavor to it. It's not it's not a wimpy kind of wine.
And, it's not real light or delicate.
No, and my vineyard does that. Okay, it's just there's been a story about a number of years ago. Another winemaker wanted to start buying some fruit from me. And he was interested in trying to do a lighter style, more Burgundy or whatever, Burgundian. And it turned out it was far less Burgundian than Dan's by any stretch of the imagination. But there was some dissing on the internet, on some blogging about, they're just making this overripe California style. You know, they don't care. They're just, telling the growers to get it super ripe and all this. And it was exactly the opposite. And so I chimed on. I said, no, you guys don't understand. You know, the intention was not to go and get the super ripe or whatever. The vineyard spoke, and it truly the terroir of this vineyard is a very ripe California style. And we've been through this now. I mean, I've been dealing with this with the older part of these vines for 20 some odd years. Mm-hmm. Dan's been dealing with the fruit since 1991. And it is consistently wants to produce that. And that is its terroir. That is its expression.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is it? What combination of effects give it that ripeness? Is it a long growing season with a lot of heat near the end? I always think of that part of Marin County as pretty warm.
It's pretty cool. For growing Pinot, it's uh-huh. about as cool as it gets.
Really?
You're off the coast, but you're only a couple miles from Tamales Bay. You're just inland from Point
okay.
Reyes Station.
Okay, because I just think of Nicasio as being, let me orient myself here, as being a north-south valley, so it's shielded from fog. But does it get pretty foggy there?
Oh, that's a good call. The thing about Marin County in general is it's very rolling by the coast. There's mm-hmm. not singular ridges like there are in Sonoma mm-hmm. County. So, when I think of my home Pinot Noir growing region mm-hmm. starts at Mendocino County coast. There's a singular ridge all the way from the Mendo border down to the Russian River that's never less than about 1,400 feet of elevation. We mm-hmm. call it Seaview Ridge. And because of that, you can be very close to the ocean in Sonoma County, but quite hot because mm-hmm. you have this continual blocking from the ocean. Then as you go south, of course, there's the river. The fog doesn't make it all that far up the river. Mm-hmm. Then there's another little ridge,
Petaluma Gap.
And then there's the Petaluma Gap. And it all kind of breaks down to the south from there. So mm-hmm. through Marin County, the fog is far more penetrating. And even when mm-hmm. people think about Carneros, more fog in Carneros mm-hmm. comes from the Petaluma Wind Gap
right.
and
yes.
the west than it really does off sure. of the San Francisco Bay. So Marin in general has a much deeper fog penetration than Sonoma County, Russian River and Green Valley, notwithstanding, uh-huh. because there again, you're right in the Petaluma Wind Gap. So it's a pretty cool area, but you need both. So you have those cold nights because the fog's in every night, but he gets beautiful sunshine, especially in the late season mm-hmm. during the daytime. And that is what makes, I think, the weather in the Nicasio area so perfect for Pinot. It's pretty poor in the springtime, as Mark will attest, because of his horrible
it's
yields.
It's pretty wet in the spring,
wet
isn't
in the
it?
Spring.
Yeah,
the cold and the soupiness and the wind, all contribute to a poor set.
Meaning you have for your viewers, your listeners,
lower yields.
When you're flowering, if it's wet and foggy during flowering, the caps called calyptra on the flowers tend to stick so that they don't get pollinated. So each flower mm-hmm. has the potential to become a berry, mm-hmm. but in poorer weather, fewer of the flowers become berries, meaning lesser set and lower yields. And as you get towards the coast, that's more and more of a problem. But the inverse is frequently true in the fall, especially the late fall in Marin, when the weather is more coming from the north, and we get these beautiful October, especially early mm-hmm. October weeks and days. So you get really nice late ripening that really lets the skins get thick and the color get deep and the spiciness be there.
That is one of the things that we've learned from the last 20 or some odd years of grape growing in the west part of Marin County is that it never pretty much is an issue with ripening grapes. I mean, there's a vineyard in Point Reyes, the Point Reyes vineyard's in, and it's not never an issue with ripening the fruit. Even out in Tamales, there's one out there too. The set is the bigger issue there, and then we have what we do also have, sort of the claim to fame, is that our winters are warmer because of the maritime influence of both the ocean and the bay. We're in between. Mm-hmm. So we get a warmer winter than anywhere in Sonoma County or Napa or even Caneros, and a very early bud break. So we do have one of the classic long growing seasons. Mm-hmm. The only one that I know of that even compares would be Lompoc. And we'll bud break very commonly in February and harvest in October. And there's very few.
That's really long.
Yeah. And so, you know,
it's
that.
Really the time we're most interested in is the time between veraison mm-hmm. and harvest. Okay. The time when the grapes start
veraison
turning color.
Veraison is that first blush.
Is when you first start seeing color and softening in the berries. That's a bit late in Marin, but there's also a beauty. It's really, there's so many factors. So I always hate to point, this is what makes it special because there are mm-hmm. so many variables. You can never point to one. But one of the things that does happen in our part of the world is we tend toward heat spells on occasion, and especially I think in more recent years in early September. And if you're almost ripe during that heat spell, the grapes can really start to raisin a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, in Marin, that's almost, and especially Mark's Vineyard, other places maybe, almost never the case because mm-hmm. everything's pushed back and you're ripening in a cooler, more extended period, which to me frequently, and it's the same with our western Sonoma County fruit, Freestone's actually a very good comparison to this area for people who know the Freestone mm-hmm. region. If you were to compare Marin County, Nicasio to anywhere in Sonoma, Freestone would be mm-hmm. the most likely to talk about.
That makes sense.
So what's really nice there is now you're ripening in shorter days, and even if it's 95 degrees, it's the beginning of October, so it's only 95 degrees for 2 hours, not 7 hours. Very big difference to the grapes. We love to talk about high temperature of the day, but when you're talking about coastal climates, it's really how long does it persist?
Duration.
How soon does the fog come in? Mm-hmm. Really the significant issue.
Sort of how, I like that too. It's very important. You know, get that fog in as soon as you can on those 95-degree days.
Yeah, and Europe, you know, like Burgundy's had 300 or 400 years of grape growing, mm-hmm. you know, to work with and dialed in a lot of stuff that we're just beginning mm-hmm. to get some history. I mean, with Nicasio, I mean, we've got Devil's Gulch has got, 10 years worth of still wine, you know, wine grapes to look at, and so we're learning, and I've planted several other vineyards in Marin, and every one I sort of think, oh, this is, now I know, you know, and invariably it's like, no, I learned something a little new, and the next one is like, oh, this one is really the one, and mm-hmm. then, no, I learned a little bit from that one, and so, you know, we're still in very much in the learning curve. And it just takes so long. I mean, from the time that you plant the grapes till then you have a harvest, till you have a wine that is significant or really a representative of that vineyard takes many, many years. It takes 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think, and if this is not a good topic, it's okay. Do you think that climate change, have you noticed that issue? I know you've been making wine up here for how long, Dan?
I've been making wine since 1985. Been making wine in the Russian River since 1989.
Okay, and you've been growing grapes since
1980.
So is that something? I mean, you hear different people talk about it. You hear, well, since 1970 something, there's been a 17% increase in alcohol or whatever. So is this something that now has to be factored in when you're thinking about grape growing and winemaking and all that?
He's looking at me. It gets back to the infinite variable issue. Uh-huh. So undoubtedly alcohols have gone up, although not in Devil's Gulch so much. And it's mm-hmm. because of that cool late season mm-hmm. and winemaking as well and when you pick and things like that. But viticulture has changed dramatically. We get what I notice in more than anything is bigger spikes in both directions. 2008 was the worst frost we've ever had since I've been making wine in 1985. So you can't say individual, you know, cold days have changed, mm-hmm. but there's no doubt that harvest dates have gotten earlier and, mm-hmm. and weighted average, you know, integral under the curve temperatures have probably gone up. But also as yields go down, as viticulture gets better, leafing is more open, more devigorating rootstocks, things like that, mm-hmm. they also bring harvest on quicker. So for me as a winemaker, yes,
you're thinking about the big picture for fun, but in reality, you're looking at every vineyard every year.
And it's just and what's the best individual to do with fluctuations.
It. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And also, I mean, if you look at, I'm sorry, if you look at climate change, you know, in general, clearly something's happening and whatever the cause is irrelevant. But it may be that as everything warms up, it will get colder in the Russian River because as the Central Valley gets hotter
that, we make it
that suction of bringing the cold air from the coast will be a greater influence and it will actually get foggier.
Are you saying the Central Valley sucks?
That was Ikona Ledkapana, one of his most classic and recognizable songs. He will be playing Friday night at the Blue Sky Center, formerly the Ford dealership in Sebastopol. Tickets are $18 in advance. If you would like to snag one for yourself, you should call 823-3227. My guests this evening, Dan Goldfield of Dutton Goldfield and Mark Pasternak of Devil's Gulch Ranch. We're going to get back to the wine. We're going to open another bottle of wine. But you two are really great talkers. I have to get in. What else is it that Devil's Gulch does? You have a great variety of agriculture going on out there.
We do a lot of different things. We raise rabbit and pork, which are two major meat production that we do. We sell rabbits to the French Laundry, to Chez Panisse, Jardiniere in the city, a lot of restaurants. And we've had just a wonderful response on that. And we sell pork to a bunch of the same suspects, shall I say.
And some up here, John Ash and Company.
John Ash and Company, Scopa.
I was just there last
night. Yeah, not a lot of Sonoma County restaurants, only because my connections have been more in the Bay Area and stuff.
He's the only guy I know who can't get his rabbits to reproduce quickly enough.
They're actually somewhat problematic. My wife is a veterinarian. She is probably one of the top 4 or 5 veterinarians in the United States for rabbit production.
Oh, really?
Well, there's probably only 6, but she's way into it, and she is actually now down in Haiti on a rabbit project down there she's been working on for several years, teaching them how to do rabbit production. She's really into international agricultural development. And this is part of what we chose to integrate into our life and our farm, that it's not just about moving out to the country and living on your own, but we do agricultural education. We do a summer camp. We produce animals and produce meat, and we produce wine grapes, and we produce asparagus. But we also are advocates for the whole concept of integrated agriculture, and that people need to understand where their food comes from and what's involved in producing it. If you want to be a vegetarian, that's great. But if you don't, you need to understand that these animals are giving their life for you, and that's important. And in fact, so was that carrot or apple or whatever, not the apple, but the carrot. And, it's important to understand where these things are coming from and what is involved in producing, whether it be wine grapes, which is certainly important and an important part of what I do, but it's got to do with an overall concept that both my wife and I really believe in, and part of that's educating people and letting people understand that.
Mm-hmm. If you've never had a dinner of food that's come only from Devil's Gulch Ranch, it's a wonderful experience. We've done some dinners
at restaurants in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and actually at Devil's Gulch with a group called Outstanding in the Field.
Yes, we've had them. Wonderful. We've had them on Mouthful. Yeah, and I've been to a couple of the dinners.
We've done Outstanding dinners 4 years now. 08 was Tracy Desjardins from Jardiniere at our place with rabbit, lamb, and pork of ours, and the Dutton Goldfield Pinot. This last season, 09, we had two dinners. It was the first doubleheader they did.
Uh-huh.
We did it Memorial Weekend, and we did Saturday and Sunday. Saturday was Stuart Brioza, who used to be at Rubicon,
mm-hmm.
and Sunday was Stefan Turje from Perbaco. And they're both incredible chefs and wonderful people, and they used all of the products, all of our meat products, and just did a wonderful, wonderful job. And the Devil's Gulch Pinot Noir from Dutton Goldfield.
Now, is this the only buyer of your grapes? Is Dutton Goldfield?
Well, from Devil's Gulch mm-hmm. itself, Sean Thackeray also buys.
Oh, Sean Thackeray, yes.
Yeah, buys my fruit, makes it on Andromeda, which is his first galaxy. Everything else were just constellations. Or is it the other way around?
Well, I know his Pleiades.
Yeah. Those are just mere constellations. I'm a galaxy.
You're a galaxy.
But maybe it's the other way around. But at any rate, Sean's a character, and he's done a really nice job. I sell a very small amount of my Chardonnay to Schramsberg.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the Chardonnay goes to sparkling wine.
Yeah, because well,
we made it a few years, and it's wonderful.
When it gets ripe.
Interestingly enough, in a given vineyard, Pinot Noir will ripen a little more quickly than Chardonnay. Mm. Chardonnay bud breaks first, but mm-hmm. it tends to stall out at the end of the year, whereas mm-hmm. Pinot just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that the Chardonnay, and part of that is also the clone that was planted because it was intended for sparkling.
Mm-hmm.
But we just found the old Wente.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's also on AXR. But
that also is a contributing factor. That it was not consistently able to get ripe for still wine. So we went to sparkling with that. But I also farm most of the vineyards in Marin County, about two-thirds. And so I've got two or three others, which Dan makes the wine from, most of them, not all of them. And then I also lease another vineyard in Chileno Valley that I sell fruit to a number of other wineries.
Mm-hmm.
If we can actually... One of the great vineyards that Mark farms is called Stubbs Ranch,
which is just north of
Mark's.
Yeah. Yes, I know Stubbs.
And they're also, they are certified organic. And
they're the only Marin, at this point, the only certified Marin County.
Right at the edge where Chardonnay does wonderfully, and it's mm-hmm. harder these days just because the way the wine market is to... I'm an inveterate Chardonnay lover and fan from Burgundies to the best of California, and I think that's a varietal that really... shines in the right place in mm-hmm. Marin, in the coolest places, just like in Green Valley and Russian River. You know, it's right at that coolest edge where it grows well that it shows best. And mm-hmm. Stubbs is probably in the sweet spot for that as well. They grow Pinot as well, but the Chard is unique because so little of it's made mm-hmm. in Marin County.
Yeah, and who's making that?
I'm the winemaker.
Oh, you're under the Dutton Goldfield.
No, that's his own brand.
I do
a little bit consulting.
On
this, you know,
for Stubbs.
Project.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, and there was a couple of other vineyards.
That's right,
too.
Stubbs. Yes.
Mark and I are the.
I can sometimes forget where
small pond, slightly larger minnows in Marin County.
Okay. Well, what I want to do next, we've got about 12-13 minutes left. I want you to open. I think it's time to compare and contrast. But while Dan, you're opening the wine. Mark, I want to ask you, what do you see for the future of Marin County and grape growing? Are we going to see, here we go, that great sound. Excellent, Dan.
We got a line forming out there at the studio door. I see that.
Are we going to see an explosion? It seems like there's some awfully good land planning in place. I really admire a lot of what Marin County has done to stop development in agricultural lands. Are we going to see tasting rooms and stuff?
I don't think so.
If Mark can help it.
Yeah, right. Marin, in terms of growing grapes, Marin is limited, as is southern Sonoma, with water and mm-hmm. The ability to drive a tractor over land that is suitable climactically. So it's very site specific. You just can't grow grapes where it's too windy and cold, and you can't grow grapes where it's too steep or you have no water. So those are very limiting factors from a grape growing standpoint. Marin, because of its concern about development, is such that you're not going to see the influx of tasting rooms and you know, the Napa Valley or the Healdsburg kind of boutique interest in tourism. It's just not going to happen. There isn't the there just isn't the ability to have that happen. I mean, Point Reyes has got a lot of tourism, yes, but you just don't have a lot of plantable grape land. You've got a couple of wineries and vineyards that are looking at having some small tasting rooms out there.
Yeah, well, Point Reyes Vineyards has the little, they're B&B, well, but they
and
have the little.
Hey, Marin just opened the little tasting room at the Olima Inn. And so, I mean, there's some of that, but this is on a very, very small scale using infrastructure that already exists. Mm-hmm. So it's just not going to happen.
Well, there's also just economic realities of the best places to grow grapes in Marin County are places where it's difficult to grow, expensive to grow, very expensive land, so consequently, obviously, expensive wines. And just due to that, it's a slow growth curve, which is a good thing also because people learn as they go. And it's not about marketing, it's about the place. And that's my attraction to Marin and all of my favorite vineyards. It's not from the top down, it's really from the land up.
Mm-hmm. But also, because you asked both about grape growing and tasting rooms and wineries. So they're very distinct.
Sure.
Even those areas where we have vineyards, okay, you can't just plunk down a winery and have a tasting room because of the logistics of traffic and realities of the communities and all that. It just won't happen. It's not going to happen. Notwithstanding that you have very few areas that you can go out and plant a vineyard.
Okay. So it's just really limited by the land.
Yeah.
And that's a good
thing.
That's
the first.
And it's extremely large parcels.
And they'll stay extremely large parcels.
They're zoned that way, and they're old families, and many of them are malt, you know, properties.
Malted,
so,
yeah.
So Marin Agricultural Land Trust, a great organization.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're big supporters. The Marin County Pinot Noir tasting that we did was.
Right.
Yeah, that's a benefit for
that. That's what launched all this.
Yes.
I got an invitation to it and couldn't attend, and I said,
what? What?
No, I was either doing the show or out of town or something. I just couldn't.
You missed it. It was wonderful. We had 16 wineries
that
all produce a Marin County Pinot Noir. I farm grapes, I think, for 12 of them, and or 10 of them, maybe. I don't know. But most of them, and Dan was very well represented there. And we had just some wonderful feedback on it that invariably the quality level across the board was good, and that was so gratifying to me, you know, that it wasn't a question of, well, okay, we got one good winemaker and come down here and do good, but the rest of them are not so great. You know, it wasn't like that. There was several bloggers and several interviews and interviewers and reviews that liked this one, and another one would like that one, and another one, but they were all impressed with the overall quality, and you know, to me, it was very gratifying, and certainly I think for Dan too, because Dan was the first winemaker to make a Marin County Pinot, and has been as I am for viticulture, he is to wine. I mean, he is making far more of Marin County Pinot than anybody else, and has got his fingers in it.
Now, is there a Marin County, or is there an approved viticultural area?
I can address that very well. Marin County is its own AVA by definition.
By definition.
Any county.
Any county, yeah.
Okay. So we have no other AVAs. We have no other AVAs planned.
Planned, okay.
Okay. And we do have an association. It is extremely loose and not, you know, I mean, not defined you know, we the only thing that
we do. If you
want
to call a meeting at Rancho Nicasio at any time over beer, we're all there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's rough and to get a consensus. And the only thing that we've really got a consensus for that we do as a Marin County Wine Growers Association is the Marin County Pinot Noir tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I take a large responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm. You're also on the, talk about districts. District 3, Wine District 3. Talk a little bit
about
this.
Marin County is part of Crush District 3.
So the official term is Crush District?
Yes.
And who determines the
California district? State determined that a long time ago, and I really can't address that.
Okay, but it's the state. That's what you just addressed it perfectly.
And Marin is part of the North Coast Appellation, which was the first appellation, and that's Mendocino, Napa, Lake, Sonoma, and Marin. So it was five counties. If you'll remember, Gallo had that Sonoma.
Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino.
Yeah, right. Well, that was, they started it with only three and they added Lake and Marin. So, and I was on the board of the North Coast Grape Growers for a while. When the Sonoma County Grape Growers decided, and not just the association, but the growers within Sonoma County, decided that it would be a good idea to have a commission, which is a quasi-governmental thing. You could only have a commission when it is by district. So it had to be District 3. So the Sonoma County Wine Grape Commission is, in fact, District 3 Wine Grape Commission. And I was asked by some of the growers up here that I know to be a member, to be a part of it and help support it. And I did. And I think it's great for Marin. I mean, Marin is such a minuscule part. Of course, anything that benefits Sonoma County is going to help Marin.
And in reality, like we were discussing earlier, viticulturally, it's very much an extension of the Southwest.
Right. I mean, it's just a geopolitical boundary. It means nothing to the land itself, really. Yeah.
Grapes don't care.
Yeah, neither do cows and chickens and all that sort of thing. Well, thanks so much to both of you. Let's tell people how to get a Dutton Goldfield, of course, located in Sebastopol. Do you have a tasting room?
We do. It's
on the corner of...
The tasting room is on Occidental Road, about a mile. We share a tasting room with John Belletto with Belletto Winery.
You're there
wonderful
at Belletto?
Winery, wonderful place.
Oh, yes. Okay,
and we're both... just about 2 miles east of 116 on Occidental Road.
Right there. Real easy to see. Easy to see. And the website, again, is duttongoldfield.com. Lots of information there. I go there now and then. And then Devil's Gulch. All the contact information, a look around, go to devilsgulchranch.com. Anything else?
Well, the 07 Devil's Gulch,
that's right.
Which I'm halfway through. I don't know about you guys. 2007.
It's got that real distinct silk. Again, it has no roughness. There's no fuzzy tannins. You know, that's something that puts me off of wine is the fuzzy rough. The tannins that dry out your palate. This has that real, again, that taffeta quality. So I really appreciate you guys taking time to be here. Thanks very much. Good luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to go out with one more song from Lad Ka'apana playing on Friday night in Sebastopol. For tickets, call 823-3227. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. It has been Mouthful of the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Don't forget, eat an Arctic Gem peach and meet me back here next week for another tasty episode when we will be talking about Perry's Deli and their 40th anniversary. Thank you.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Time for dinner now.